is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia Postalgia Podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
Yeah.
Also joining me is Kalex Everything, who isn't on video. We had some technical difficulties trying to record the first time, but she's back on audio only. I'll just put an icon in for her. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. And in honor of all the hot men in this movie, please feel free to use the hot emoji face.
Like the blushing icon? Yeah.
Yes. Literally, for all the men and women that in that movie that I'm just like, whoa, gorgeous.
Oh, man. Yeah, so Caleb, if you need to hop in, just don't feel free to jump in and interrupt us because we can't see your facial expressions.
Yeah.
So if you need to hop in, just kind of jump in. We don't mind.
Just start screaming.
Okay, so I'll preface this episode today. We are not talking about it. It's a separate episode from Miyazaki Magic. We will be coming back to that one next week with Howl's Moving Castle. I feel like this episode is a lot more topical because all three of us just saw this. I know we talk about anime on this podcast more often than not. We'll throw in some music, throw in some videos, throw in video game stuff. But I feel like it would be a disservice if we didn't hop on air and yap about Sinners, the movie.
Because this is history.
Yep.
Because it's such a good movie. And the one that all three of us saw last night. It's funny enough, I didn't realize, I thought y'all had already seen it. And I was trying to when I got out of the movie, I was trying to talk to you guys to see if y'all had already seen it, to talk about it. I know y'all were in the theater when I left.
I had seen it. This was my round two. And it was even better the second time. And I cried more the second time.
It was my first time seeing it.
Okay. I feel like it would be a disservice if we didn't talk about the movie because there's so much good out of that movie. And I feel like we just really want to talk about it. So I will preface this right now. We are 2 minutes and 30 seconds into the recording. Or I don't know how long the time step is going to be for the actual episode, but we are very early in this. So I'm going to give a huge, glaring 50-foot red button spoiler warning on this whole episode.
Yeah.
We will be talking about the episode for real, and not giving any kind of spoiler-free reviews in this talk. So if you have not seen Sinners, click off of this episode. Go listen to some of our other episodes.
You have to go see it.
Yes, go see it. While you're on the way to the theater, you know what I'm saying? Pop in a Miyazaki Magic podcast episode on your way there and then watch it and then come back to this.
Then come back to this one.
So as far as how we do our reviews for movies, I'm going to keep it exactly the same how we usually do it for our Miyazaki Magic stuff. So it's going to be, early thoughts, overall thoughts. Not trying to go too deep into things. Then we can kind of get into some overall themes and characters and some of our favorite moments and stuff like that from the movie. I don't think there's anything that we would want to change from this movie because this is a 10 out of 10 movie for me, at least. I don't know. So I think Kayla, since this is your second time around watching it, I'll start with you in terms of your overall thoughts on the movie, not getting too deep into the weeds with stuff.
Oh God. I think this is one of the most moving, powerful movies I've seen in a really long time. I think that it's beautifully shot. What's crazy is it's actually made me care about cinema. I'm watching people do technical reviews because of how much I love this movie. I am a big music person, so the music in this movie moves me. And the first time I watched it, I was so in shock at the scene in the barn or what the juke joint that I was just trying to absorb it all. I was a fat kid eating cake, which I am, and I literally was just absorbing it. And then the second time I watched it, I cried the whole time because it's such a powerful scene, having all these two cultures predominantly in the barn, being shown throughout time, and just the whole movie's great. But I really think what gets me is the music and the power that music carries, the history that it carries, because most of the time when people were taken from their countries and brought here, they couldn't bring everything with them. They could bring nothing with them. So what did they have? They had their stories. They had their music. And just, I can't even begin to describe how much I love this movie and how somehow it goes by too fast, because I'm like, no, I need more time with them. I want to see Smoke and Stack in Chicago. I want to hang out. I want to see their past. I want to see their dad. Yeah, just, it's so good.
Yeah. I'll move over to you. So as far as first initial thoughts, because I feel like you're gonna end up seeing it again. I just know you are. I mean, I will too, but like, I know you're gonna see it again. So like, what on a first watch, like, what did you kind of get from your initial thoughts?
So everyone watching this movie and just giving it the highest of praise, and for most things you would think like, well, they're hyping it up too much, and I have been a victim of that before, where like everyone's like, wow, this movie's amazing, and I go see it and I'm like, it was good, but this movie lives up to the hype in yep. such a way where it's not just about like the action of the movie or like how it looks. It is in the way it's crafted and in the way its story was being told. I've always been like that. Ever since Django came out, I've been a cinephile, where I look at how the movie was made, why it was written, how it was written, how it was filmed, why it was filmed on the type of film that it was filmed on. And to see Ryan Coogler care so yeah. much, it is making people like Kayla, I was very happy to hear that, care about how it was made, about why film and the artistry of filmmaking is so important. It is our modern day, what Sammy was doing, that's what Ryan Coogler was doing with this film. It's right. he's an artist, and he's telling his story, and not just his story, but the story of culture and of storytelling and of, you know, actually, it makes, after you see the movie, it makes sense why it's called Sinners. I think this movie has a lot to do more about religion than it does about really anything else. I think Taylor knows more how much music means to me, as someone who still makes music. From the jump, I was kind of hooked into like how music plays a role in this movie, and it just is, it's almost its own character in this film, the music. Yeah. And yeah. I personally just love blues music, so it added to it. But that scene in the barn, and I think everyone talks about it as, without spoiling it, everyone says like that sequence genuinely moved me to tears. It was so powerful and so visually stunning. And just for like, it is just an abstract way of saying Sammy brought the house down. Because, you know, yeah.
Or like the roof is on fire. Like a, yeah. like a genuine, like yeah. a, like an idiom or yeah. turn of phrase that a lot of black people yeah. use, to turn of like the exactly. house is like really jumping.
It is a slang term that is universally known, at least in America. It is known throughout the country, and it is turned into this beautiful, beautiful sequence. That's one shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing.
They have a lot of one-shot moments in the film that are so well done. Taylor, before you say anything, because you're also a first-time viewer, I was just like doing a little history because I grew up in the church, and something that they tell you when you're very young, or they indoctrinate you with, is, you know, there's music that honors God, and then there's secular music. And that stems from, you guessed it, racism, but also self-preservation. Because when Black people started making churches, they could not feel safe enough to play their own music. So they had to move to playing, you know, the general white people churches music, right? So deviating from that put a target on your back and made any Black music evil, quote unquote, right? Like, it was like, oh, well, you're listening to that Black music, da 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 da, and that would make people afraid, or say like, well, the devil's in that music, or there's so many like different terms to like the devil's music. They had devil in front of a lot of things to scare people away from it, or to carry weight. And it just, as someone who grew up hearing those things, not necessarily about like Black music, but secular music in general, it just like hit me so hard as I was watching, you know, not to jump too far into the story, but seeing Sammy choose over and over again that he's like, I still want to live my life and like be a good person and honor my father and work hard, but this is integral to who I am, and I don't want to give that up.
Right.
And, okay. I just wanted to bring that in because I feel like a lot of people who, like, don't grow up in the church don't understand what a powerful moment Sammy had by, like, choosing to continue to love music regardless of what his circumstances were. Okay. I gave you the
money. Yeah, no, that was great. I think I kind of had a similar like take on that in terms of with somebody that whose family and personally like is very religious. Mm. I think that's a kind of an interesting take on it, and one that I definitely agree with in terms of just how the Black church has evolved. And honestly too, just like people understanding that Christianity wasn't Black people's first religion.
Yep.
And honestly, it's interesting because they bring in like the more spiritual aspect of it from like West African or African cultures in general with Annie using hoodoo and the concept of like the spirits, like summoning and calling upon spirits with the power of music and stuff like that. So I think it was an interesting kind of take on that in that regard. And so when it comes to my thoughts on the movie Sinners. Zoe knows this, but I am not a fan of of Black trauma porn in movies. Mm. And for those that don't understand what that is, it's just mostly just like that. Do you remember that? Like, I don't know if it was a pandemic run, but it was like that there was like a run of maybe 2 or 3 years where every Black movie has something to do with slavery, racism, police brutality, or some kind of like a form of oppression that we faced in the current day, right? Yep. And while I do, or in the past, right? Like 12 Years a Slave, and then there was another, I can't remember, there's one movie with that had something to do with police brutality. There's like a bunch of them
The one with Joey Badass.
Yes.
Where he keeps reliving the same day where he got killed by the cop.
Yes.
That's horrendous.
It's a little, weird.
Was that one that was like a kind of a musical ish? What is? Oh gosh, you get a call. Kayla, you good?
Yeah, I got a call. Hold on, let me see if I can.
Try to put it on Do Not Disturb and see what happens.
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's my mom, and she has access to getting past my Do Not Disturb. Hold on, can I shrink you guys? Can't. Hold on, let me just tell her.
That's funny. She's still here. I don't remember the musical you're talking about, but I remember the the Society of Magical
Negroes. Black that was people. Kind of, but that wasn't really like a trauma thing.
But it was just like, it was one of those things where I think I saw a lot of people talk about, like, I was really hoping this was Harry Potter for black people, and yeah. it ended up being still about white people, and like, I don't know, it was weird.
Yeah, there's like, I can't remember the dude's name, but he was in like, it was like a rapping musical thing that had something. It was like a light-skinned dude, had like curly hair. I forgot his name. You like him as an actor, so that's a problem. I can't remember his name.
Me?
Yes. He's, oh God, what is his name?
Light-skinned.
Are you talking about the guy that's in the musical Hamilton?
Yes, that guy.
Oh.
Do you remember that movie he was in where he was like, they're like rapping for most of it, and it's like about
in
like
the getting
caught in a crime? No.
But is it the guy from In the Heights?
No, it's not. That's not him. I can't remember his name. That's gonna bug me. But whatever. Either, regardless of who it is, if there's another movie that has something to do with just like black oppression and police brutality, or like facing slavery, or some sort of that, like black trauma, mm-hmm. where that's the basis of the
David Diggs.
Yes, that guy.
Blindspotting?
Yes, Blindspotting.
It's not a musical, but here's the thing, that movie's good.
It is good. But it kind of, it still falls into that. I think it falls into that realm of like just black trauma in general. And so for when Sinners came out, it includes black trauma, but in a way that's like, I think a better way for me to explain it is to tell you about a scene. Like, so Delroy Lindo, love him as an actor, who's Delta Slim, right? That scene where they're driving by, and they're driving by the group of prisoners that are working on that sharecropping yard. And he basically is recounting an experience that he had with all of them, how all of them kind of got jammed up, and how they were doing something and made a bunch of money, and then a bunch of them got jammed up, and he was the only one that really kind of like was able to move out of that and continue on with his life. Everybody else in that place was got locked up. And then also there was another person that was with him in the group that ended up getting lynched by some white people, because they lied on him, and they said he had stolen money from a white family, and then ended up having sex with a wife, that kind of stuff. Like, they just lied on him and ended up lynching him, right? And so there's a point that I think with this movie where they highlight those issues of trauma without it being, and I think I'll use this word correctly this time, though, heavy-handed. And so, in a way that like shows like, hey, this happened, but like how we as black people process and move past it is a way that where we try to always look at the positives. Like, and in that scene, I think they do some stuff in this movie that, while regular people people who aren't black can still understand the issues at hand, there are a lot of stuff, a lot of things in this movie that I feel like only black people can really understand. And that was, it was funny enough, I was sitting next to like this white family watching the movie, and they didn't look at me crazy when I did this, but they kind of like glanced over, because when Delta Slim finishes the sentence, when finishes the story, and you even hear like in the way in which the surround sound or like the background noise is playing, like that you can hear him being somebody being strangled, being choked.
Yep.
You can hear like the angry white mob yelling and stuff.
Yep.
He starts tearing up, but instead of like just like letting it flow out, he starts like hitting the car and starts humming. And starts changing the subject with like a nice soothing song, and starts cracking some jokes. And I feel like that was, and I started laughing, and they started looking at me kind of like, not crazy, but they were kind of glancing, because like that's just something that we do. Like if y'all know me for enough time to know that, where it's like that's just kind of a coping mechanism that transcends generations, like the power of just finding ways to just move past it. Because we know it's something that's just a part of our existence, and something that's a part of the I don't know, just like the way of life for us in a lot of ways. So like either we can let it break us down, or we just kind of hum through it, find the joy in certain areas, and just kind of keep moving past it. And I thought that was just like, that kind of encapsulates like my overall thoughts of the movie. It just does so many things really, 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 really well. And then I'll be the third person to talk about the barn scene, which I think is so funny and awesome because I saw a funny tweet the other day, or actually earlier this morning, where it seems off topic, but let me land, okay? Where this one K-pop stan account was trying to say that, like,
oh God,
Blackpink created is like the reason why showgirls are big now. And I'm like, are we serious? I was like, are we for real? Where it's like, and people continue to show them like pictures of like Motown artists, TLC, Destiny's Child, all that kind of stuff, and saying like, hey, you guys wouldn't have the K-pop girl group stan culture you have without Black people. And I think that's the barn scene is a good showing of just how influential Black people's music are to the general music landscape at large.
All music.
And like
any music you enjoy, 9 times out of 10, it has
some roots to a Black person. Some Black person did something that created that genre. And a lot of it starts with blues. There's like a person that did like a video where he drew like blues in the middle of a paper and then was just like, okay, here's how this became this. Here's how this became this. Here's how this became this. And it was like, well, blues, people wanted to do, people, you talked about it, Caleb, like secular music. Well, people wanted to sing blues in the church, so we got gospel music. Yep. And that's, you see the scene at the end of the credits with Sammy singing "This Little Light of Mine," how it's technically a gospel song, but he sings it in a very soulful, bluesy way. Mm-hmm. And then you get, that's just every genre being represented. And then even too, I do love culturally the Chinese geishas spinning around in the area too. I thought that was a really cool addition because of the Chinese influence into Delta, Mississippi.
Yeah, I think those are Chinese theater performers, if I'm correct. Yes. I think they're Chinese theater performers. I really enjoyed that they showed that culture because they were there and they were, so again, because I was jumping into, like, I've been watching one Gorbunglian interviews, and I want to go back to what you were talking about with like Delta Slim's monologue. So I told this to Andre last night, that monologue was originally written out to be 3 pages long. And they just kind of kept like running it in different ways. And then during one of the takes, instead of talking, however it was supposed to end, the actor decided to start humming and singing. And I think that's Stack in the car. Stack started. Michael B. Jordan realized that he is like, oh, we could have like a moment here. And tells Sammy, like, oh, you have your guitar, don't you? And the actor who plays Delta Slim was like, it was just a really beautiful moment. And I'm really glad that even though that scene was cut short, they kept the most powerful part and they moved it forward, like with the music aspect, because the whole movie is moved forward by music. So that was really cool.
Yeah,
and then number two,
no, go ahead.
Because I have Chinese ancestors, I was like really interested in the Chinese people in the Delta, and I've been sending people, I think I sent one to you guys last night. If not, I will definitely do it today. No, I did.
You did.
I did send it. But how, because Chinese people were closer to whiteness than obviously being Black, they were like allowed to own stores, but white people didn't want to really shop in those stores, especially if Black people still were shopping in them. So it was very normal for these areas to have 2 streets and have the stores right across from each other and have one be selling to white people and the other one selling to black people. And they were, they always mentioned how, in the videos that I've been looking at, the Chinese people have been mentioning how they wouldn't have survived without black people's business and without that community. And I don't know, I just think it's really cool because I have Chinese on my dad's side because there were Chinese people forced to Cuba to work in the sugarcane field. So my great-grandmother was a black Chinese Cuban. And yeah, I know. It's so fun. It's very fun. And well, not fun because of how she got there, but it's fun.
Yeah, the ancestry is interesting for sure.
The ancestry is cool. And I got to spend time with her a little as a kid, and I just always thought that she was so cool. But yeah, it's crazy how we people just gotta work together. It's been hasn't it been long enough?
To quote Remrick, we're about equality here, okay? No, but let me make sure I finish like what I at my point originally. So like I said, I'm not a big fan of black trauma porn movies. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of those. I think because in the fact that it's like there's so many of them that it's like you gotta give us something else, right? And I think that this movie does a good job of highlighting the black trauma without necessarily making it super heavy-handed and not making it necessarily like a overarching part of the background of the characters, I guess. Because yes, because Sinners is a commentary on music, spirituality, race, and oppression, especially because of the fact that the deal that Smoke and Stack make to get the juke joint in the first place is because is through the means of buying it off of a grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, right? And you know, once you find that information out, you know at some point that's going to come up again. You know what I'm saying? And it's at the end of the movie and not a situation where it's like the overarching thing is like them battling the KKK. Because I feel like if that was the case, if the vampires were all like racist Ku Klux Klan members, I don't think I would have liked it as much.
I also thought that. I agree. I thought from the trailers, I was like, okay, so Haley Steinfeld's character is racist.
Right.
And if they're all racist vampires, then that's not going to be... I was like, I'm glad. Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. I said this... Well, and this is what I was telling you before the pod, Taylor, where I had the way I interpreted Remick.
Yeah, Remick.
Remick.
Where he reminds me of, and this is from experience, people that I know. Not anyone specific. It's just people that I know. I said... The vampires remind me of the friend that's too woke. Meaning.
Interesting.
Meaning. And this isn't me saying like, oh, Ryan Coogler is trying to take down the woke. That's not what I mean at all. Remick saying like, we don't care about color. It's all about equality. We're all one people. But he can't see how like,
That's detrimental to the plight of people trying to make to minority and marginalized groups.
Right,
correct. And he's still trying to take Sammy's culture for himself.
Yes.
Where it's in turn where it's like I know people who are so woke, where they turn around to saying some stuff that is like, they don't get it, but it's still racist.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, everything's beautiful and we're all one family and you just need love and equality and kinship. But brother, look at what you're doing. And he's so far up his own ass that he can't see that he's selfish and that and I get it, he's lonely. That's kind of the whole thing. That's his whole backstory.
Yes. I was about to say that. Like the main thing about Remick is that he's lonely. If you look on Spotify and you go to the bottom, there's a section that has newspaper articles.
Oh, yeah. You told me this before the pod, though. Yeah.
Yeah. that kind of give you some background on the characters. And Remick came over on an immigrant ship that was going to be full of Irish people, and they all died. They like were all dead, and Remick somehow survived that. And I think his main thing is loneliness, but then also trying to assimilate all these cultures together, because most of the time, whenever, you know, when they do become this hive mind mentality, he's not singing their music. He's sharing Irish music with them, mm-hmm. and they're all dancing, you know, in their own, with their own flair, but being very Irish.
Yeah.
And he was lonely, and vampires, you know, it's very funny because we could think like emotional vampires is like a thing that we talk about, but it is that it's manipulative when he could smell the sadness on, oh my God, I forgot her name.
Annie?
Not Annie.
Mary?
Mary. When he could smell the sadness on Mary because her mother had just passed away, mm-hmm. he was like, don't be sad. Be with me. If you're with us, you'll like be happy. That was the vibe he was giving. That's an emotional vampire. That's manipulative. And so they are both physical and emotional vampires. And this has just done so much for the horror genre.
Yep.
Please let horror get its moment in the sun. It can be so much more.
Yeah. And I mean, personally, I'm not a big horror fan. So like, honestly, me going to see this movie, because at first I was like, I don't know. But I feel like the more people started to talk about it, I was like, okay, I have to see this movie. But Remick is interesting to me as a character because he himself, as an Irishman, also faced very similar discrimination and oppression on his way over. This is what
Sam was talking about yesterday.
Which is interesting because, like, and he even mentions it. I don't remember what the context was in the movie, but I remember him slightly alluding to the fact that when he got over being Irish, like, even though he was a white man, him being Irish and not American still put him at a disadvantage in terms of just, like, the opportunities he could get when he got over.
Correct.
And, you know, situations with the KKK in general, how they still don't 100% like him. And so it kind of coincides with your point, Zoe, with facing that kind of marginalization, even though you're still kind of white, you still try to, like, make it your plight still at the same time when it's not the same plight. Because at the end of the day, you're still a white man. So you're still going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? You're still going to be fine.
Yeah. The only white people that other white people were welcoming of if they came over were British people. Any other white person with any other accent was still an enemy.
Yeah, like Polish, to a degree. Italian, Irish.
Exactly. 100%. That's why there's so many pockets of different cities of people that would congregate together to protect their culture.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And it's like, oh, you're white, but you're not white.
Yeah, exactly. And so you have situations with, and I love them incorporating, I know it seemed like the Irish folk music was more like demonic in a way, but I still feel like in that moment of him singing those songs, it's more so like still kind of celebrating his triumph over being oppressed as people and wanting like everybody to be together in that moment. So I wouldn't say that scene specifically is my second favorite scene in the movie, where
it's so
he's doing the Irish jig really well, I might add. And I think I think they probably definitely pan the camera down to like an actual Irish dancer to do the dance, because you just see his lower body. They were killing it. And then like having the people like swing around in a circle, super haunting first off, and then also just really really well done in terms of like the overall song in general.
Sam, when that scene came up, he put his hands out and he goes, "I rebuke that energy." Freaked out by the dancing, but it was so good. It's so funny.
Another thing that hits me about the music is going back to Remick trying to take Sammy's music trying to take his powers. It is, again, probably not Ryan Coogler's vision, but what it made me think of is the current landscape of rap and and rap fans, where my first love of music is rap. It's how the reason I listen to everything that I do today started with, sadly enough, Kanye West.
Me too. And that's something here, yeah.
It's, you know, Late Registration and what's the first one? College Dropout. Those two albums, you know, hearing him sample and stuff. But as someone who loves rap as much as I do, there are some, you have to realize as someone who isn't black, there's some stuff that they are going to talk about that you're not going to ever experience and you're not ever going to understand, but you can sympathize and realize that that is something that they, it happens. And a lot of, especially online, a lot of rap fans like new rappers like Uzi and Cardi, and like what's the biggest demographic at a Cardi concert, Taylor?
Either Hispanic or white, to be honest with you.
And they just take it at face value.
Yep.
And it is kind of Remick, where it's like, it's a music by a black person and we're going to take it because it entertains us. And we're not going to really think about what it is that, yes, Cardi barely speaks in his songs, but he's still saying something. It still comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though the subject matter is, you know, and even though the subject matter could be, you could point to it and be like, okay, well, he's just talking about how much money he has, the women he has, and then like shooting people, right? You could kind of boil it I mean, down. If you want to generalize a lot of the landscape of rappers, you could kind of generalize it in those three type of sentiments or whatever. But I mean, I think in a commercial sense, yes, but then you have to break down like other rappers. Like I'll say, for as much as I love Griselda, like West Side Gun, Conway the Machine, Benny the Butcher, and then even like Boldy James, and all they talk about is selling coke. And so what's so funny to me though is like people, you know, white hip hop heads love Griselda, but not in the way where, like, for me, when I listen to it, it's not in a situation where I'm like, oh my god, this sounds like, selling coke sounds awesome, or like, this is just a cool, like, what are you talking about? It's like, no, it's like this is how he had to live to survive in an impoverished area of Buffalo, New York, by having, but, and this was the only feasible way he saw to make money, which is having, and he's a product of Reagan's America. And that's just how I kind of view it. And while the music sounds awesome and like the way he talks about it sounds like a movie, you can I still can see it and be like, yeah, this is exactly, he's talking about how he had to make a living before rapping.
Remick's character is the 17-year-old white suburban kid who listens to Griselda, who hasn't had to struggle the same way that anyone has struggled before. Well, like anyone before Griselda who had to live through that. And I know I sound like the friend that's too woke. It's coming around. It's coming around where it's like, where I might sound hypocritical, but I know that as someone who loves rap, I can't ignore the things that other people are ignoring, the things that Remick was ignoring. All Remick wanted was to see his ancestors. He didn't care about Sammy's ancestors. That's kind of my main point of this whole take.
Yes. I like that take for sure. As far as takes on this movie go, there are some pretty bad ones from what I've seen on the internet. And one of them a lot of them actually have to do with Mary. And I feel like people don't really fully understand her place in the movie. And Kayla, you're welcome to chime in on this too if you feel like it. I think for me, there are a lot of people who are trying to say that Coogler was highlighting the struggles of interracial couples, but I think is a gross misunderstanding of Mary's character.
Not at all.
Yeah. Because it very clearly tells you she's like 1/8. She's an I make a joke. She's an octoroon. She's 1/8 white. Or 1/8 black, rather.
She's not crazy.
An octoroon is crazy, but she's 1/8 black. And so she is, by the most literal of definitions, white passing. And so her stance in, while it comes to like her being able to freely walk into that that juke joint barn, and everybody in there knows who she is and is fully aware and like likes and is in community with her, right? And with, they're like, oh, Stack was being so mean to her, trying to push her away, and he didn't really love her for real. I'm like, no, you don't understand that if a white passing woman who is perceived to be white is all up over this clearly black man, also, and you're forgetting the fact that she's actually married to a white man, a very wealthy white man,
a rich white man, yeah,
they both run the risk of dying, especially because Stack runs the risk of dying by lynching, by all accounts. And then Mary runs the risk of also dying once people figure out that she's 1/8 black.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, like, I think that was one thing that I thought was interesting conversation about race or whatever, especially when she first shows up in the story, because you're not privy to her lineage, I guess. And so when Sammy sees her for the first time, like, staring over at Stack, and he's like, hey, that white woman's looking at you. And he's like, and it's you know, funny enough,
yeah,
I have experienced that before. It is not a foreign concept to me, where it's like, hey, the white folks are staring at us specifically, and it's like, all right, just keep your cool, don't do anything stupid, we're gonna be fine, that kind of stuff. So I thought it was, I thought Mary's character was interesting, especially when they tell her to go out and talk to Remick and the group, because, or like figure out ways to make money and talk to the white folks because she is white passing. Therefore, they would easily give her more information than they would Stack. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I thought that was an interesting... there's a lot of bad takes about Mary online. I thought they don't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do love her character. I interpreted it in a Hispanic way because that is who I am. So it's very funny when you start speaking Spanish around other Spanish speakers, they'll be like, ay, ¿de dónde eres? Because they're like, where are you from? I can't tell where your Spanish is from. And I remember when I went to Colombia, they were like, they kept telling me like, oh, your Spanish sounds so white. And my heart broke a little bit because I'm like, you know, well, I am around a lot of, and white Spanish just sounds like not from where you are. It doesn't have an accent. Mm-hmm. So and you don't have a lot of the same like terms or like quips because you're not there to be in on the latest phrases. So when Sammy asked like, oh, like, what are you? I was like, oh, I know that feeling when I'm around other Hispanics. And then I'm like, oh, I'm Cuban, Colombian. They're like, both? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm American. I was born over here. and it's that feeling of like, it's almost like you want so desperately to fit in with your own people. And I'm sure that is a part of her character, right? Like, she wants to be where other black people are because a lot of who she is feels black.
Yeah, and I'll sorry to cut you off, but I think you're on the right track. I think with her, sorry, but I'm saying you're on the right track. You're really good with it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off like that. Because I really, like, this is something that, like, is important to me, I feel like. So I don't want to jump in like that. But basically, she resents how much of her family lineage is white. Mm-hmm. And she understands and, in a sense, like, craves the community that black people bring, and how they're very, how we as a people are very inviting and are very, you know what I'm saying, communal. In by design, we're communal, even though there's a lot of arguments out there that we're starting to break away from that. But that's neither here nor there. I don't want to get into that box right now. But we, by design, are very communal, a very communal people. And so I think that she values that and wants that. And it's tough when like she's able to exist in those predominantly white affluent spaces. So she kind of resents that a bit. And you can kind of tell in the way that she desperately wants to be a part of the juke joint festivities and stuff like that. Like, even when Stack tells her to leave. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally good. No, I think it's obviously what you said is similar to what I was going to say, but it's that she sees both sides, and it's hard to... She's seen the oppression, so she can't flip her views at this point. She's like, either I'd have to ignore this side of me, which is what raised me and what made me who I am, and just be white to hide and save myself, or I try to mix it. And I think it's also because she had moved away. She wasn't living in the Delta anymore. She had moved with her husband. She was only down here for her mom's funeral. Mm-hmm. So she must have not been surrounded by black people and black culture, people that she knew, who knew that she was partially black, so that she could be in that community in the first place. So she was just lost out there on her own.
Yep, for sure.
I think that's the biggest thing. And I know that it's like weird, and I don't know if you guys ever, I'm sure you guys do feel this way at a certain point for different things. But like, I remember when I visited family in North Carolina, it is weird to not hear other Hispanics around for me. Right. Or when I went to Italy, I kept telling my friends, I'm like, I have not seen one black person. And that's weird to me. Like, I don't like when it's not like a melting pot. Like, it just starts to freak me out. Cause I'm like, where's everybody else?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? It's just the one person. Anyway, yeah, that's, I'm sure it was just a part of her soul she felt was missing.
For sure. Zoe, I want to, we've been talking about mostly like the theme and stuff like that for a while. I do want to actually talk about the vampires in this.
I wanted to
start with you, because I think that's something you definitely wanted to talk about for sure.
That I was thinking of bringing that up.
Yes. I do want to ask, because you did see Nosferatu. I did not watch it. In terms of the overall, Kayla, I feel like did you watch it as well?
Yes, I did.
Okay, how do you guys, for someone that has not seen Nosferatu, in terms of the overall, like, sort of vampires in general, how does it compare to each other? I mean, so, like, or compare or contrast to each other?
They're different types of vampires.
Yes, but where Nosferatu is more of a, every vampire movie is, the vampire is an allegory for something.
Yeah.
And yes.
You would think, for people who kind of like don't autism about movies like I do, they would think, oh, duh, most monsters are. Not necessarily. Vampires are like the main thing, where Dracula was lust and sometimes STDs. Nosferatu is not, what's the word I'm looking for? Non-consensual lust. And the Black Plague.
Yeah.
It's this movie, obviously, the vampires are bloodsuckers in the most racial, religious way possible. But also, I was thinking to myself, besides all the themes, besides the themes about music and race and religion, this is just a classic good vampire movie. Before anything, and I bet other people have had picked up on it too, but before anything happens or anything's revealed, Remick asking to be let in to the Klansman's house.
Yes.
I was like, it hit me. I was like, yeah, he has to ask because that's a vampire thing.
Yeah.
They can't be let into a house. Yep. And then when Annie starts bringing out
pressing cornbread about it. Oh my God. I love that part. That's so cool.
But when she's making everyone eat the garlic, and when she throws the garlic onto Stack's face.
Yes.
Like, you can tell Ryan Coogler not only cares about how this was made, but he cares about the folklore of vampires. And he brought vampires into it, like, he made it feel American folklore, kind of South by Midnight, that kind of feeling, which I genuinely love. We've been getting a lot of European folklore movies, which are always fun. Like I said, I really liked Nosferatu, but the vibe and aesthetic of American folklore, as an American, hits a certain part of my brain. And I think he did a really good job, especially when it hit me specifically as a filmmaker. Once the sun goes down, well, first off, the dichotomy of Smoke wearing blue, Stack wearing red.
Yeah.
At first, it's just like, okay, it's opposites, and it pops out. As soon as the sun goes down and it cuts to Grace making the sign for Club Juke, that shot is lined up where the night sky is behind her, and it's a deep, dark blue, and she's painting the sign with a vibrant, fiery red. And that feels like classic, like Fright Night from the 80s. It just screams at you, hey, this is still a vampire movie.
Yeah.
It's just the way, and I'm going to sound like I forgot his name, David Washington's brother in the Criterion Closet, where it's the way directors speak without speaking that just hits me so hard. And I, as someone who studied that, I speak your language, man. I'm listening.
Kayla, I know you also saw both of those films. So as far as like your interpretation of their comparison.
Yes. So I love vampire movies. And it's because vampires are so sad. Because a lot of the time, vampires to me stand for this like promised freedom, because vampires are always trying to convince you to become one of them. Why? Because at the end of the day, all vampires are lonely. They have had to see everybody around them die. The world turns without them. Their favorite time is gone. So typically they don't miss a person. They miss the, like in a bunch of vampire shows. What's the one that I just finished watching about the gay vampire?
Interview
with a vampire.
The older vampire misses the time. He's like, I miss the my friends. I miss the music. I miss the art. Everything's different. It's a lot of missing, yearning, loneliness. So vampires are always trying to get you to join them with this promise of like, you'll be stronger, you'll be better, you'll be more beautiful. And it looks like freedom, but it's conditional because you lose most of the time. Food tastes like ash. You will lose loved ones. They're going to You're going to grow old in front of you. The world is going to pass you by. You can never see the sun again. You have to run forever. You have to be on the run. And throughout this entire movie, they kept having themes of like, oh, well, how was Chicago? I heard that in Chicago, you're free. And they were like, nope, you're not. Oh, well, I heard outside of the Mississippi, you're free. Hey, guess what? No, you're not. There, it's all conditional freedom. It's like, oh, you, yeah, you made it to this point, but there's still rules. And so to me, the vampires throughout the entire movie are like, we're this promise that freedom is around, but to an extent, and you'd have to still, you know, live your life by these rules. But anyway, I think that they did a really good job at making the vampires feel current. Because typically also vampires are like ancient beings. And it's like, oh, well, I've been around since 1824. And it's like, could I just have one that was made yesterday? If I could have one yesterday, I'd really connect to him more than today. And they had that. They only had someone who was a couple more years old. And I know that they had older gold. But it might have been the vampire that turned him. You know, it might have been the vampire that turned Remick. We don't know, but he felt current. He understood what people were going through. He was very aware of the circumstances. And obviously it's because he came over on the boat that hadn't been that long ago. So just like phenomenal storytelling makes me want to bash my head through the wall. Like the cool.
And one more thing.
One more gift.
About vampires. Vampires are inherently very sexual.
Yes. Yeah.
For the most part, like I said, Dracula is about lust, but old love and like a type of love where it's like, I need you and I will search ages and time periods to find you.
Yep.
And Nosferatu is, I am toxic masculinity and I will take what is mine. It is all inherently sexual. And Ryan Coogler did not forget that, because freaky this man, dude, movie bro. Is freaky.
Maybe you drool it. You want a taste?
Bro, hey, hey, look. My father listens to this podcast, okay? I didn't realize he does, but he does. I am not at liberty to say what I want to say about that scene for the sake of.
So you've just been letting me be crazy while your dad listens to these podcasts? Hi, Taylor's dad. Shout out to you. Yes, I'm insane, but I will behave.
However, Dad John was crazy. Two separate scenes. Your body ain't forget me is crazy, first and foremost.
Okay, Wait. That, ooh, I don't know if I'm saying her name right. It's like Wunmi, W-N-M.
Yes,
Wunmi. Yeah, name.
All right, I shouted this out on my Instagram the other day. That praise be to God that here in our year 2025, a plus size actress is a main love interest who is so smart and so cool and so hot, and everyone is like, oh my God, she's so smart and so cool and so hot. And you just, y'all don't get it because you're not plus size women, but you don't understand that that happens one in every 500 movies. Like, I feel like it's just never talked about. We're like, plus size women are never seen as sexual. We're always a joke. It's always like, oh, they're just like my funny best friend who, yeah, in the end, they might get a funny dorky friend of mine, but they didn't get the man. They didn't get the guy. And she,
his the Michael B. Jordan.
Didn't forget her. She got Michael B. I literally, it means so much to me. Truly, truly, truly. Like, when people talk about, like, why do we have to make movies about different types of people? Shut up! Shut up. You don't see yourself on screen, and then you see yourself on screen every day. So you don't get it. You don't get it, and you're stupid, and you're dumb, and you're probably ugly. So,
Oh my god.
I'm sorry for ranting, but it's like, it's just people are dumb. And she's so incredibly cool. Wouldn't be easy, my friend. Like, oh. Yeah,
Annie was a phenomenal character, and she looked really good in that movie. So yeah, no, your body ain't forget me. It's crazy line. Like, crazy line.
What was she speaking in?
Some kind of African language.
African? Oh, okay, gotcha. Uh-huh.
Either that or Creole.
That makes sense. She's
some
kind
of maybe
lady,
some southern,
right?
Some kind of southern Creole.
But I don't think hoodoo is Creole.
That's it's what not. I. That's well, what I was.
If voodoo, I believe is.
Hold on.
It
we can.
Someone check me.
But yeah, bro, it's not only is it just a good movie and good themes, it's a good vampire movie.
Yoruba.
Yoruba?
Yeah, it's a West African language. It gotcha. Says the film, it's like using hoodoo practices that are rooted in Yoruba language.
Yep, yep. Oh, and that makes sense because the Stack twins are based off of a god. Oh, like there, I think it's also Yoruban. That's twins,
mm-hmm.
Which is really cool.
Kugler, oh, you cool. Genius.
Yeah, they he spoke about it in an interview, and he's like, because someone's like, why twins? Because we all love two Michael B. Jordans, and I was like, correct. It but it was based off of these twin gods.
Obviously, you can't steal this pussy for one night. It's crazy. Crazy. Like, I was like,
you
wow.
Steal trains, and you give me a
I was like, bro. I think I heard there's like a bunch of couples in the movie theater that I was in. So I heard somebody go, "Woo!" And I was like, "Holy
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, holy shit!" Yeah. And then yeah, like the babe, you're drooling. And honestly, when I saw that, I was like, "Oh, he's dead. He's done." I said, Zach is dying.
We also need a moment for the girl who was like, "Oh, like let me wash up first." And he's like, "You're so beautiful. I just want to taste you."
Sammy is a wild boy for that.
Let me tell you something. I out loud in the theater went absolutely. Period.
Sammy's wild.
You're
Sammy's a wild boy.
You're not wild enough. That's such a
I
good
guess not.
Line.
It is. It really is. I just think Sammy's a wild boy for that. That shit crazy.
Listen, he
and they bro. They talk about eating. They talk about cunnilingus so much in this movie, which is insane.
He found that button.
My cousin.
which is low key kind of pivotal to the Black experience too. That specific thing where he's like, oh. He's like the boy become a man type shit.
Yeah.
Like that's, oh, bro. There's just some things that are just inherently Black. And I love that about this movie.
You know what else I think is very well done? I could talk about this movie forever, bro. It's
for real.
It's not a huge point in the movie because I just think it's supposed to be regular. Obviously, it's old, right? So masculinity was in a toxic spot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still these shining moments of Smoke and Stack hugging each other, saying, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love you too. And this moment, a moment that almost made me tear up, was when Sammy starts singing to Stack in the car. And Stack obviously, like, he makes a joke like, oh, we gonna make some money, but like he's surprised and he starts pumping him up.
Yeah.
And that's this moment of where I've never experienced this with my father, but I've experienced this with like other men where it's like you're kind of afraid to pump up something that isn't too masculine, where music is the arts. So it's not anything that masculine, but Stack, who's a gangster, who's a World War I vet, who's mm-hmm. like this like kind of picture perfect vision of masculinity is
like a man's man. Yes, essentially
is hyping up his little cousin for doing something that he just loves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And again, probably not Ryan Coogler's like point, but it's something. It's just a small little thing that can hit certain people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, that's just beautiful. It's awesome.
For sure.
I hope it encourages people to talk to their loved ones and go, man, how different would it be if I expressed what I felt about mm-hmm. my loved one instead of just like keeping it inside, because mm-hmm. that helps no one. They can't hear you when they're dead. You know what I mean? So it's like,
exactly,
tell them
that. Yeah. I do want to go back to the vampire part. I think for me in vampire media, like obviously I haven't seen Nosferatu. I'm not sure if I want to, honestly.
It's good.
I might watch it eventually, but I do think like them, I like to your point, both of you guys, them having the very basic understanding of vampires and how using those as a pivotal plot point in the movie. Like we joked about Cornbread getting let in, but I think it was such a good such a funny moment, but also a really like tense moment that really served the plot really well, where he's like, where they ask him like, why are you just now asking to be let in? And I'm like, and he's like trying to make jokes about it and like, he like tries to sprint to the door, and he like, as soon as he gets to the door frame, he like stops and like makes this like weird NPC pose. And I go, man, that was really, really good. And then, my favorite part, like it happens for two, like less than a second, is when Mary walks back to the barn.
Yeah.
And for that split second, Remick just lifts in the air. Bro, the entire theater goes, the entire theater like gasped. And I was like, yo, that was hard. That was crazy. Yeah.
It's
that was
so
crazy.
Good.
And even like when Sammy falls off that ledge and he's like running and Remick like jumps. Mm-hmm. On top of him and whatever. And I thought that was a really cool moment. But like that subtle, like, because you know, obviously, you know Mary's going to get turned. You've seen it in the trailer.
Yeah.
You saw it. Like, like you just kind of know that that's what he's doing. Because Remick did it to the two, that KKK couple. They did it to them, right? You just kind of know already that she's a goner. But you don't know exactly how they do it. Because I honestly thought that while she was like being entranced by Remick's song, that the girl behind her was going to do it and you would see it, right? I thought that was going to be like the big jump scare thing. But I felt more scared just seeing him lift off the ground and they change scenes. And I was like, oh God, that shit was crazy.
Yeah.
And his design at the end is so good.
I love
When he's like a full, like long fingers and like the big teeth and shit.
This happens in a lot of vampire movies where, like I said, they're very sexual, so they look good throughout the whole movie. Except Nosferatu. But Nosferatu is very different. Usually Dracula is like, throughout the whole movie, is this good looking, suave, always in nice clothing. And then at the end, it's kind of like they're bat ish form and their monstrous form.
Yeah.
So he comes out with his long, creepy Nosferatu-ish fingers, gets fucking cracked on the head, and now you can see like the rest of his mouth that goes up to here, and he's got all the sharp teeth, and he's bleeding, and the thing is smoking. He looks so fucking cool. Jack O'Connell killed it. He was awesome.
Yeah, he was great. And then, like them, obviously them dying to sunlight is obviously like a very like common trope. Yes. And I think like them doing it in that way where, what's so funny is my movie theater experience was hilarious because I can't seem to just not, you know, there's the stigma that black people talk through movies a lot. So like I literally, when they kicked everybody out of the barn, I literally out loud, I didn't say it that loud, but like the guy next to me, he started chuckling. Cause I was like, everybody get going somewhere. Let's leave joints over. Right. They all walk out the bar and I go, are you fucking serious? I was like, oh, I literally go, are you fucking serious? And I see them walk in the car and I go, oh yeah, they're goners. Yeah. I was like, it's over. They're gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then last thing I'll say, I know circling all the way back to the spirituality part of like the theme of sinners. And Kayla, you could definitely chime in on this one too. When Remick is like baptizing Sammy in the water.
Yep.
And Sammy tries to say he tries to say the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
And
our Father.
Thinking that that's gonna save him. Heaven.
Yeah.
Which like usually in certain vampire media, like a cross or like saying certain like Bible verses usually deter vampires, but it doesn't work in this context. Yeah. I thought that was a cool like addition, and how like all of the vampires that were walking started to say
Yeah.
The Lord for back.
Well, Irish people were colonized as well, and they tried to force Catholicism and then Christianity on them. So when Remick mentions that he's like, oh yeah, I knew the scriptures too. And even though they took our lands, like he mentioned something about like being colonized, he goes, mm-hmm. but the passages still bring me peace from time to time. And
yeah.
I was like, oh man, that's so good. And it just made me want to watch Kneecap again.
Also good movie, Taylor. You should probably watch it.
You should watch Kneecap.
What's it called?
Kneecap.
Kneecap? Okay.
Yeah,
it's on Netflix.
It's about around the time where my phone is dying. It was around the time where Ireland was, and they were in a war for quite some time. But they start rapping to kind of remind people, like they start rapping in Gaelic. Yeah. In their native language, because one of the first things that colonization always takes is language from people.
Mm-hmm.
And
the UK were trying to ban the Irish language. So they start rapping in it. It's right. Very interesting.
Very okay. good. And that's another thing, right? Like good circling back again, what music does for people. Black people were still allowed to sing while they were out in the fields. So they still sung in their native languages that way because they were like, oh, this, it's just singing. What could it do? But singing had so many stories or hidden messages or ways to be like, we're leaving tonight. We're escaping. They don't know. We gotta go. So taking a movie like this and talking about how music connects us to our past, our present, and our future, and circling back to the barn scene that like just like changed my life. It's just one of those things where it's like we have to continue to say these stories and not do it in the way that you talked about, where it's like, what's the term you used? Black trauma.
Oh, black trauma porn. Yeah.
Yeah. We can't do it like that, but we still need to talk about it in a way that educates people and it makes them want to study and figure out like, oh, well, what took place here? What happened? We have to continue to basically do what Hamilton did for white people. Sinners has done for minorities. We have to continue to do that. We have to do it because it's making people interested. It's making people go and buy books and read and study and figure out what was my place in all of this? And what were my people doing at the time? And how can I educate myself so I don't have to bother other people and be like, well, what do you mean? Like, don't ask someone to teach you, go learn.
Yeah.
I have to get off my little soap.
Zoe, do you have something real quick?
Yeah. So why I thought this movie has more to do with religion than just race. And again, it makes more sense after you watch the movie, why it's called Sinners and why it's a religious title. It's that scene where Remick is baptizing Sammy. And it's this whole religious, he's basically a cult leader Mm-hmm. That's how cults act. It's like, it's all about peace and love and equality, and we're all like yeah. family and this and that and blah blah mm-hmm. blah. And he's getting baptized just to go back to church, and like either of these two paths was gonna take my music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not giving up my music for nobody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can still, and the thing is, him saying the Lord's Prayer is not him. That's showing that he still believes.
Yep.
Yeah.
This isn't a movie of rebuking religion or
no. And that's a take that I saw that was really stupid. So go ahead. go ahead.
Without saying it, because hey, the movie doesn't always have to say it. It's Sammy going, I was given this gift.
Yep.
And I'm going to use it. No one's going to take it away from me.
Yep.
Right.
And I can still believe in the Lord.
Yep.
That does not, doing this whole night has not taken away my belief or my talent. So I'm going to let it shine.
Yeah. It didn't take away his love for either thing.
Yeah,
He didn't choose to walk away from the church. He just chose to follow his dream.
His dream.
Which in turn is like, this is what Emily told me last night, where it's like the church that he was at, or well, you said it too. Christianity is not black people's first religion. It
Correct.
Is the white man's religion. So it's like,
well,
which is the
American version of Christianity, is the white man's version. Like, right, like it's the white Jesus with really pretty hair.
The King James version, essentially.
It's that version of like,
he played for the Lakers.
I'm gonna take what I want because this serves me. I didn't hear what you said, and I'm really.
That was crazy. That joke. It's LeBron James joke. Don't worry about it. It's a LeBron James joke.
Okay. But yeah, sorry. it's taking the Bible and just serving it to serve their own purpose, and that's not what it is. So
yeah, and as somebody that does believe is a Christian, I think that it's I do think like a lot of times when people talk about the fact that Christianity wasn't black people's first religion, they usually use that context in bad faith.
Yes.
A lot of times when they argue it, and it's mostly, I think it's a situation where black people make the best out of bad situations, where it's like, yes, like we were introduced to this religion that was kind of forced upon us, but there's still power in our belief and our faith in this thing.
Right.
So I think in Christianity. So, so yeah, but last thing I do want to talk about before we, last maybe like 15 minutes or so, just how good of a job Michael B. Jordan did playing two different actors, two different like characters. Just his performance, like, okay, he's a great actor. He's been in so many different types of roles. Yep. I think it's so funny. People always, since I'm not that, I'm 27. So it's like, I watched The Wire really late. So for people that watched The Wire when it was actually airing, they're like, oh, I can't see Michael B. Jordan as some kind of like heartthrob love interest because I saw him as Wallace on The Wire. And honestly, I can understand that because like Wallace's character is so just very innocent. Like, if you've ever watched The Wire, I would implore you guys to watch season one of The Wire, because that's when he's in, and he does a very good job. But he's a very innocent, naive character, and he's still like, I don't know how old he was when that show came out, but he's young.
Yeah.
And then you see him as Creed, which is, I think, was like the bigger one. I mean, he's in a bunch of other roles too, but like the Creed was a big role, and then obviously him as Killmonger as in Black Panther was a big role that I think was like kind of got him. I think kind of got him up there. I mean, obviously, I feel like every superhero title is going to get an actor pretty high standing.
No one talks about him as Jamal in Hardball.
They don't talk about it. Yeah, they don't. I don't remember. Kayla, I forgot about that.
Kayla, if you ever need a good cry, watch Hardball.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
It's a Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is the coach for an inner city little league team.
Little league baseball team.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say anything besides that.
It's okay. Fucking sad. It's fucking sad. I'm
sorry. I made myself cry this morning because someone used the audio on TikTok of the second or the first ending clip after the credits of course, I remember that day. It was the last day I saw my brother, but it was Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick on the on the Black Panther. Behind the scenes.
Oh yeah, the monologue of Stack talking about his brother.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh man.
And I'm about to cry again, and it made me sob because I had also seen like an interview of several people talking about Chadwick, and Michael just like couldn't even get through it. He would just kept going like, "Yep." Yep, because like he's like, I'm gonna cry, so I'm not gonna talk about it. And I just like, I was like, oh, look at that, I'm sobbing. Number one, that scene makes me cry uncontrollably, no matter what. But having it be real world with Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick made me like kill myself. Yeah.
His I think just as far as performances go, I think this. I don't want to like be a prisoner of the moment, but I feel like this is his best performance. I feel like just because of his ability to play multiple characters at one time, and then also have really good chemistry with all of the characters as two different people.
Yep. Yes,
I feel like that's really hard to do. I feel like you can do it. I feel like there's always one specific role if you're playing two different people. There's always one specific role where you as that character do a really good job with everybody on screen. Mm-hmm. And then the other one's kind of clunky, but it still works. He does a good job with both really well. Like, especially when it comes to Annie and Mary, like that dynamic, being able to have good chemistry with both love interests at the same time, is hard to do. And I think he did a phenomenal job with that. And then I love Don't Worry Lindo. I think he's just as Delta Slim, he's awesome. If you ever need a movie with him in it that's gonna be really good, watch Defy Bloods on Netflix. I'd argue that role is better than the Delta Slim role, honestly. That one is really cool, and it also serves a similar like cultural purpose, like in his role specifically, when it comes to that movie and Sinners, because that one's about Vietnam War vets, like Black Vietnam War vets, and how they were treated in the segregation era when they got back home for the Vietnam War. Don't Worry Lindo.
He's in a lot of Spike Lee movies.
Yeah, he is.
He's really good. Malcolm X, he's in Crooklyn. Great actor.
Amazing actor. I think it's nice to highlight just how good of a job he did. And also the guy that played Sammy, first role ever, by the way.
God, his voice. Is so crazy.
He's just, man, to be a first time, like first ever role, like more of like a leading ish role, and just kind of take it on that well, is amazing. And even it was funny, you would think like even in scenes where things get like inherently sexual, like a first time person with not he probably learning how to have chemistry on screen with somebody in that way, you would think he wouldn't. You think he'd be a little clunky, but that was a really good scene. The way they handled it,
there was no.
He did phenomenal. Inside.
Not a single clunk to be seen. he was so smooth. I'd fold so fast.
T. Can you believe Cornbread is not Forrest Whitaker's son?
He looks just like that nigga, too. That's just crazy.
Just like him. Sam, they're not related.
Oh, someone's lying to us.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, he's also in a bunch of stuff, too. He's really good.
Yeah, he's
awesome. That actor has the sweetest face in the world. Like, he was so silly goofy, like especially when he does try to get back in after he's been turned, when he has his like little hand out for money and just like I just think he's so cute.
Yeah, when he put his hand on the door frame, it's like, y'all gonna let me in or what? And I'm like, oh my god.
Yes, he did so good.
This here's my wife, so you better show some respect.
No, what did he say? He was like, okay, now you've done it. And then he said,
I'm about to beat the black off you.
Yeah.
He's so funny. Oh, that wife though did a great job. She goes, hold on, hear him out.
Yeah, hold on, let's hear him out.
I don't know why I really liked Michael B. Jordan's delivery on "That's a good woman." It was really. It reminds me of so many men that I know. It was just really funny.
Like his delivery in that conversation. I mean, yeah. Again, going back to his ability to play two separate.
Yes.
Personality specifically, yeah. like Smoke is definitely the more like cynical, by the book, very like yeah. straight and narrow type. Even though he does like involve himself in like gang stuff,
yeah.
And he's a criminal, but he's very much like, because when they had the conversation about the till and like the money, he's like, we gotta be about business,
right?
And Stack is about having a good time, and so like when he's when he's talking to Cornbread, and he's like. I'll give you enough money. I'll show you enough money to where your wife won't fuck you. Not the nice and slow shit she be doing. It's yeah. like that's just crazy.
She might even let you put her pecker in her mouth.
I was like, whoa.
That's wild. They Michael B. Jordan played being two people so well because Stack is definitely like, yes, he's a more outgoing, like extrovert type, but in the movie he plays a lot of the support. Like he always makes Smoke the cigarettes, he passes Smoke the knife, he does like the little things while Smoke takes care of like the jobs that would be scarier, and that is because he's the baby twin, right? But there's so much of him that I don't know, like I'm like, it's kind of when like your younger sibling, you see them act older than you for a second, like they're protecting you. Like sometimes I'll see that with Sam when like little dumb things, like when I don't want to get in line for something and he's like, oh well, I'll do it for you. Like it's like little things where you're like, oh man, I've raised my sibling well. They have that dynamic. And throughout the whole movie, every single time, since this was Sam's first time watching it and my second time, every single time they'd be like, there's no me without you. I'd be like,
also, it just makes so it's like perfectly written that Stack would want to live forever.
Yes.
And Smoke would want to die.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because they're both dead.
Yeah.
But in the sense, it's also double dead because they both miss each other so much.
Yep.
That was the last time I saw my brother. Like, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so see good. My face.
But they both went to live with the woman that they love.
Yeah. I do, before we sign off, I do want to say that ending scene where he like is about to die and he sees Annie and his child that didn't make it past childbirth, and he like reaching out for them before he ends up putting an entire drum into that,
which is dragon. Very. I want to say that fight scene is very awesome. Tarantino to me.
Yes, so, I know. It's I know, like I was like, it reminds me of Django a lot.
Ryan Coogler just kind of went, now I'm gonna have some fun and fucking an entire drum, bah! Like oh my God.
There was a second when I saw it the first time that I'm like, please don't just reach out to the baby and let this white man live. Please finish the job. And then the friggin' leader wouldn't shut up. And he's like, oh, you know what? Actually, before I cross over to be with my wife and child, I am going to release a full round in your stomach.
And the theater, when he turns and the camera's just on him and he's like just doing this, the entire theater was crying laughing, like everybody in there was howling how funny that was. But yeah, I think that was just, I think that's a great, it was a great scene and a great send off for that, for Smoke as a character. But yeah, hope you guys got anything else before we hit that hour 30 mark.
It's only April. It's gonna be hard to beat this one, bro.
100%. Also, just the small thing of what Andre said about Stack wanting to live forever and Smoke not wanting to. The moment he takes off the little protection charm is when I was like, oh, he's ready. Like, he's done. This is his last stand, because that thing protected him from getting bit.
Yes. I know we're on time, but I feel like that was my theory. I think the necklace kept him from getting bitten by Stack.
Yeah. Because Stack tried to get him twice and it just wouldn't happen because the love of a good woman will protect you forever. Damn. Okay. I can now shut up. I could keep going, but I will now shut up.
Oh boy. But okay. I guess for me, if you did sit through this entire spoiler riddled episode and have not seen Sinners, go do that. But that's really all else I have. You got anything else though, or no?
Listen to the soundtrack.
Soundtrack is fire. Soundtrack
Rod Wave. I knew it was Rod Wave. Once the credits started playing, I was like, what?
Rod Wave. I don't understand why they decided to add Rod Wave. Somebody said the scariest part of the movie was a Rod Wave song at the end.
Wait. Before we leave, Rod Wave is good, right?
I like Rod Wave. It's just now he's an artist where you have to be in a certain mood to listen to him, because everything he sings about is fucking sad.
Okay, and what is blues music?
You're not wrong. So I do believe. I feel like if he went into that lane, he'd be a lot more popular. He just sticks with rap. But like, obviously, like he'd have to. It'd be more of like a pseudo hip hop blues, type of situation. But I feel like he'd be more popular that way. He sticks in that rap lane, which I don't think works for him all the time.
Yeah, I agree. That's how they're here. But his song for Sinners is good.
Yes, it is. I'm not gonna sit here and lie to you. It is. That was funny though. The scariest part of the movie was a Rod Wave song. Oh no, that was funny. Okay, so that has been everything for us. Howl's Moving Castle, Miyazaki Magic Episode 3 is coming. I got sick.
Easter. Praise the Lord for a day.
Jesus had to come back, and we couldn't just have an episode when he came back. We couldn't do that to him. We couldn't outshine Jesus. We can't do that. So, what did you say, Kayla?
I said we never can. Amen.
You never can. So, Howl's Moving Castle. I'm probably gonna have to rewatch it just to make sure it's fresh in my mind. But it is coming next week for sure. We'll be continuing on Miyazaki Magic for a while. This is just something we had to talk about because we really wanted to.
There's no way that we couldn't.
Facts. Okay, so I've been Taylor Aiken Nostalgia, Astro by Zell, KLX Everything. See you guys next time. Peace.
Bye.